right. Anything else? Okay. The next item on the agenda will be then item number 18, an information report regarding this construction management, facilities uses, and rental agreements. Mrs. Castile?
Board members, if you will recall, the district has leased facilities such as Del Norte and Cortez. It was prior to my arrival, so I can't speak to how those were negotiated or how the contract was, but I do know that they have been at these locations for quite a while. In addition to that, we had requests from LACO for special education housing, which we've also had a contract with for a number of years. What we have done recently is we have basically looked at petitioners' requests for space and looked at the availability of the space that they're looking for. We look at what kinds of activities, what kind of usage they would like for certain space, and then depending on what the specific use is for space, when available, we would absolutely go through our architects and our consultants to make sure that the space is in the condition that is necessary in order to provide that space, and when it is not, recommend what kinds of things are needed in order to negotiate a contract for the use of that space. If I recall, one of the last renegotiated contracts that we had was with Parent Place, and the board discussed square footage and the amount of money that it would charge for that space and the length of time. Currently, our legal counsel is reviewing all of our contracts to make recommendations and ensure that the language is appropriate. We are in the process at this time, as all of you know, in discussions with Edison Learning, Inc. in regards to the Willowood site, and our legal counsel, Ed Sklar, is here to answer questions, as well as our architectural firm, DC Architects. So, Mr. Sklar.
Right. As Ms. Castillo says, let's, you know, this is agendized as a discussion item, so let's discuss. At the last meeting,
at the last meeting,
I got clear direction to negotiate a facilities use agreement with San Jose Edison in regard to negotiating for additional facilities, what I think we're referring to as Building Z and Building F at the Willowood site. The day after the board meeting, sent out a proposed facilities use agreement to legal counsel for the charter school. Parties have been negotiating in good faith on both sides, I would say, and I believe that the board has been kept in the loop in regard to the most recent discussions or the discussions as they've been ongoing, the feedback that we've gotten from that I've received from the charter school in regard to proposed amendments to my initial facilities use agreement. There are a few issues that where I think I need clearer direction, or I need clear direction, and I also just wanted to make sure that it was on your radar, brought to your attention. Like I said, I believe all of this has, particularly in regard to the recommended modifications in regard to the fire life safety and ADA accessibility issues that are there. Mm-hmm. I think that there were, I could go through the numerous questions that exist. I think that we're aware of them, you know, one of them being prior to, are we going to allow occupancy prior to these issues being remedied? Do we need further DSA review? And I believe that Mr. Sims and the architects will be able to discuss what type of potential further DSA clearance may be needed before the rooms are occupied. Who's going to pay for these modifications, and who's going to do these modifications?
Let me interrupt just real briefly and ask you a question. Back in January, the end of January, we had an item that brought back as typical with respect to completions of product or projects. When we generally approve construction projects, you know, we hold a certain amount of money back as far as in payment to those, and it's subject to I forget the exact wordage, but it's subject to you know, basically completion, approval and completion, meeting these particular codes, the certificates of occupation, and that it meets the needs as with respect to the DSA, the Division of State Architect, and whatever city fire codes and education code requirements are, and that sort of stuff. This perhaps isn't a question for you necessarily, just as a clarification. Where are we in that process? I know it's a 60-day process before, from the time we approve that completion item to the ultimate time that it's the final payment. Where are we in that process? And Ms. Castillo, can you answer that?
Or there are some architects wandering around outside.
Let's introduce our construction consultant, Dave Larkin, and DC Architects. We have Lori. Would you like to come up? Mr. Cox, just in terms of your question, I want to make sure that our architects basically speak to the difference between a construction management project and an insurance rebuild project, because I think there are real differences in expectations and in managing the two projects. So if you would introduce yourself as our lead person here tonight, thank you for joining us.
And also, as you take those items, as she said, would you then look at what in respect to the insurance as to what the ultimate usage is. If you know, there's certain levels that are met based on meeting that certain requirement, you know, what is the process for going beyond that to make it, habitable towards and utilization by schools, as you would normally expect to be used for school district usage?
Certainly. I'm Richard Duncan. I'm president and CEO of DC Architects. Let me, if I could, maybe perhaps begin with kind of a general overview of what we're calling Building E and Building F. Building F, as you probably know, is the multipurpose facility, has a platform, has a kitchen. That was the facility that was damaged in the fire. There was some smoke damage that occurred in Building E, which is the facility with raised stairs for band, choir, that sort of function, along with some other facilities. Our charge at the time was to reconstruct Building F and get it through DSA once again. The process is a little bit different with a fire damage facility because DSA has what they call an IR, Interpretive Regulation 94-22, which specifically speaks to reconstruction after fire damage. And the basic concept is that you can reconstruct the facility in kind without triggering too many additional costs. The interpretive regulation specifically says, however, that you might be subjected to additional access compliance requirements that are part of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which is, as you probably know, federal legislation. So, but in this particular instance, since you had insurance, we were able to work with the insurance company, and actually they, DSA, when we submitted, we had a preliminary meeting with DSA, and they reached Building E, even because it is, as you probably recall, connected with an overhang, with a canopy, and some of the ductwork and other mechanical issues were somewhat tied together. So DSA required that we upgrade the fire alarm system, upgrade some of the elements in Building E, even though that was not the project that we began with. We were, however, able to, in looking at your insurance policy and working with the insurance company, able to get all of the upgrades. There's new HVAC units on Building E. There's new siding on the entire facility, both Building F and E. We were able to get the insurance company to agree to pay for those. Actually, in the very last line of this interpretive regulation, it happens to say, school district officials should be aware that insurance policies generally cover only the fire damage areas, and additional project funding may be necessary to complete other required work. And by that, they mean work required directly by DSA. It's a plus for the district that you really didn't have to spend any additional money, that the insurance company came in and funded those additional items. So with that, we do have a certificate of occupancy. The project is ready to occupy for its intended use. And that's, I think, part of the key, and I'm certain will be part of our further discussion. Let me go back to the very original question. Could you repeat it?
Well, basically we're looking to, my perspective anyway, is once we're done, once we've approached this process, this 60 days, so that everybody gets paid and everybody's happy and we can put students in, you're telling me now that we do have a certificate of occupancy that, I guess before I go to that, we have a certificate of occupancy for use as it's originally intended to be used for. And we've built it to meet not only those requirements as to what it was into the pre-fire, but also ultimately for this use, for its intended use now under the current rules, regulations, DSA requirements, Ed Code, in a conversation.
The basic concept is that we had to reconstruct the facility in kind, in other words, just as it was previously.
Okay.
Then DSA did look to upgrading, like the fire alarm system, the restrooms, various other elements, but that was, again, required specifically by DSA mm-hmm. as part of their regulations. And it is geared specifically to its previous use. In other words, it is a multipurpose building, it is a kitchen, and that's currently, we have basically all of the documentation. Of course, there was an inspector and so forth. And the only thing lacking is, I'll say at this point, basically paperwork to submit to DSA and get what they call close of file with certification. And that means the Division of State Architect is now certifying that you have built that according to their code and regulations.
Current.
Sorry.
If the building had been... You know, well, and in fact, this was. It was built to code or whatever requirements. When was it built? I don't know.
I think 1964.
64. So 64, obviously, the codes have changed since then. And it's certainly built to those DSA requirements or whatever agency. But secondly, it was, but then it was virtually abandoned for years, not used at all. And you know, we had issues in the late 80s, early 90s, we did not use that facility, and as a result, it became run down.
Sure.
And so now, you know, it wasn't used. We had asbestos issues, and just it wasn't available to use. We did use it as a high school or some of the areas. I don't think these particular buildings were used as such, but in the same general area, but it wasn't used for that. Anyway, but now... You know, unfortunately or fortunately, however you look at it, we had a fire, and it gave us an opportunity to now take a look at both of these facilities and bring them to code, bring them to a point that we can use them for their intended use. Well, are we at that point?
Perhaps I didn't make it clear. This falls under a specific exception for literally, they call it reconstruction after fire damage, and it is... basically allowing a school district to reconstruct the facility as it was under the 1964 code or whatever code was in effect
fine.
At that time.
But what good is that to us?
I mean,
now we've hired you to come in and do this process and come through, but and I understand that the insurance company is only going to pay up to a certain standard, but we want to put kids into these utilizations and bring it up to perhaps even the modernization standards that we had already addressed throughout the rest of the district. Why wouldn't we have done that? Or did we?
I can't speak to the scope that we were given. It was simply to reconstruct the facility as it existed.
For Building F, you have to separate the two buildings. For Building F, it is brought up for ADA to current code. For a fire, it is brought up to current code, including fire alarm and sprinklers. So Building F is up to current code. The things that we built per the 1964 drawings pertaining that we were able to were the structural issues and the structural integrity of the building, with the caveat that it still is sufficient and still is safe for kids. And obviously in 1964 they build differently than they do
right today,
and we obviously made those exceptions and stuff, but that building is safe today. It
okay.
is built to,
all right.
you know, for current code. And building E is a different issue.
And I'm sorry, I just want to be certain that you capture that Building F is designed for its previous use.
So the previous use was a multi-purpose, a kitchen, a teacher's lounge, and that's what we rebuilt it for, mm-hmm. meeting ADA and fire for today.
Okay, so Building E, though, we're back to a facility for all practical purposes is built to 1964 standards?
And, yep. and had it not been for DSA reaching a little further to that building, I suppose we wouldn't have touched that building.
We wouldn't have touched the building. I mean,
wouldn't have touched it. You mean you would have brought it back to its 1964 status?
That was never going to have any fire damage except for smoke, so that's not in our scope of work. And the insurance company, before we were even involved, took care of the smoke damage.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? Yeah. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
Oh, with just so you have questions.
I will have. All right. Ms. Shoemaker?
Okay. Just so we're clear, the building that was rebuilt and the one that had some minor modifications because of fire damage is approved for its intended use as of 1964 and the plans that were submitted then, which is a workshop room, a multi-purpose room.
What? Two separate buildings.
Yeah. So if the intended use were to change to make one of the rooms a band room, another an art room, another a music room, what would the process be? Would we then have to go back to DSA with the new plans? Or is it because it's able to be occupied by students, you can do whatever you want in there?
No, our recommendation would be that you develop a very clear program of use for each room within the facility and have someone, we could certainly do it, but have a code analysis performed to assure yourselves that the new use is adequate to meet the code, because different occupancies require different student loading, for example, mm-hmm. and there are just different things that you'd have to look at. I would suggest it even go further to develop a preliminary plan that everyone agrees to, that we could then do a code analysis on to determine if it would need to go back to DSA, because there are certain significant changes that clearly could trigger the need to go back to DSA and to get approval of the plans to make those changes.
Mr. Spence?
Okay, this is where I think I'm a little confused, you know, because this project took 3 years to get done, and I'm a little confused because can we or can we not use those buildings for what their intended use was?
Well, yes.
I mean, but
let me talk about maybe.
Like, for example, there's a band room there, right? Can we have the Edgewood band come and use that band room, or another band use that band room?
Let me see if I can describe it first by talking about Building F, which is the multipurpose.
Mm-hmm.
That building will now have what DSA calls a new A number. Whenever we submitted the plans for reconstructing Building F, the multipurpose platform and kitchen, DSA assigned a new, what they call an A number. Those plans have been approved. It's constructed according to those plans, and you will eventually get a close of file with certification for that building, Building F. Building E is slightly different because I'm told that in 1964 you did have DSA approval, which is good. Mm-hmm. And the question then becomes, could you occupy Building E just the way it is? And that's where we did a preliminary assessment, and for various reasons, we think to make that, because it had been in, I'll say, disrepair for a number of years, there are things that you would still have to do to make it habitable and safe for kids.
And are those the items that you listed in the report that you had given us?
Correct.
Before? And is that the MAC? Is that the fullest extent that you're aware of is the need to? And I don't have that. Do you have it?
No, that was actually very
a site assessment, a preliminary one. Ah, okay. Right. All right. Right. That may be unfair to hold you to that standard.
And to be
what?
Straightforward, we would need to know if those facilities were to be used for a different purpose, and then we could go back and analyze room by room what that new purpose is and the needs in terms of bringing it up to not only code but safety standards.
Right. Mr. Spence, I'm sorry.
So basically, when this on the 25th of January, we approved that this was substantially complete in the 60-day time window, right? For everything to be done, and that includes that we get the certificate of completion from the state. We've done it 60 days for it to be complete or not. What's the definition? I guess what's the definition of complete? Clearly, it's not that people can go inside.
Actually, in school construction, there's a slightly different term. Substantial completion. You can occupy a facility once the construction is substantially complete. And I think what Mr. Cox was referring to earlier, when you get substantial completion, you typically will have what we call a punch list, items that remain to be complete, minor items, not impacting occupancy, but rather the paint is chipped in this corner. Those types of items, and you will withhold retainage from the contractor to assure completion of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not uncommon to occupy upon substantial completion. And then after those punch list items have been complete, you then get a notice of completion.
Okay, and that takes more than the 60 days then, is that correct? Or it can take more than 60 days, I guess. Because didn't we approve it that within 60 days it's complete?
January 25th, yes.
So what happens if, like on March 25th, it's not complete?
I think we keep repeating ourselves over and over. We can use that building that's called the multipurpose room for the food services for a multipurpose room. If there's going to be any different use of that building, it will require a plan.
Mm-hmm.
So should we need that building for multipurpose room to feed students, I think we would be ready to go in 60 days. Is that correct?
You can use it now.
Okay. So we're ready to use that now.
Okay.
For those purposes. If you will recall, we had DSA plans for a media center. That was going to go forward when that investment was going to be made by the company. They subsequently said, no, we don't have the money to do that. Therefore, that specific room requires a plan for other than its intended use. When we get that plan for other than its intended use, then we will go through the process of making sure that it's appropriate for that use.
And what was its intended use that it was built back to?
Multipurpose food services.
Yeah, the multipurpose, yeah. So that's okay.
Multipurpose
and the band room
food
was built,
services.
But this is where I'm confused.
Okay, so let's go back to the band room.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance did not pay for anything to be done to any other inside of either of those buildings, not the band room, not the shop room, not any of those rooms. The only thing the insurance paid for was the multipurpose room. The reason that it took so long, there was a lot of negotiations about the outside of the building, and actually I thought, you know, the district and the architects did a very good job of getting the insurance to pay a lot more than, you know, they needed to. So right now, the two buildings that we're talking about are the two classrooms that we're talking about, in addition to the multi-purpose room for the purpose of food services, we would have to look at in terms of its intended use. So if building E, which is a shop building, were going to be used for X reason, we would go with our architects, review the site to see that it's appropriate, and decide whether DSA or any further work would be needed. So as we sit here, the only thing you have is an approval to use the multi-purpose room and the kitchen for food services.
Okay, why wouldn't the band room be approved for band?
Because as we sit here, there's no proposal on the table to have that happen, for us to go in and review for that purpose or to fund for that purpose. We've not discussed that, okay? So there is no plan. If there's a plan before us, okay, it's not just an email that says we want to use this, okay? It takes a lot more specificity in terms of what is needed.
No, what I'm saying is when the band room was redone, it was done so it can be used as a band room.
The band room was not redone to be used for a band room. The outside of the building
was done.
The inside is not up to ADA code or any other code that I know of today. That would take us going back, assessing it for the purpose of a band room, bringing a budget forward, mm-hmm. bringing whatever process DSA would like for us to do in order to use that space for that reason.
You know, and I guess then this is my confusion in dealing with that, is that, you know, we had a bunch of different uses that were proposed for this at, you know, when it became substantially complete. And it seems to me that as a district, we should have had that conversation earlier so that we could have figured out what those uses would have been to try to see if there was a reason to bring those up. Because it's not like we would have immediately, there's no way we could have brought the special ed classes in there immediately.
Okay, I would like there's Mr. No Cox.
Hang on just a second. Just go ahead.
There's no way we could have brought, you know, the Edgewood bands thing or whatever. You know, there's no way we could have done that stuff immediately. So.
Just a minute.
I mean, that's why I wanted to bring up all this stuff is that, you know, when we have that kind of stuff, because this is where, you know, it took 3 years and maybe you did a great job with the insurance and so forth. But, you know, we reopened Holland Crest Middle School like in 90 days, you know, which was a big modernization project, you know, that we had to get done. We approved June 24th or whatever, and it was open at the beginning of school. You know, that was a, you know, that was a big project, a school that had been closed for, you know, 10 years. So that's why, you know, I start struggling when we start talking about two buildings when, you know, I know we've seen those kinds of projects get done. And so that's why I guess I'm a little disappointed or confused on, you know, I think this is a discussion we probably should have had earlier if those things weren't going to be clear that they could have been used for something. I think that's, I mean, that's a district thing that we should have done. I do have another question, and that is the issue of the Field Act came up at our last meeting.
Can you hold for just a second before you go on to that? And okay. I want to ask one question.
By all means.
Thank you very much. If I were to walk in to what I would call the band room, it's in the building E as you go in, what would it look like? I mean, platforms and look. I mean, it wouldn't have seats and everything. Would it be used? Would I say this is going to be your average classroom? I suppose it could be a chemistry room, or it could be a physics room. Could be anything. I mean, at Edgewood we've got those kinds of things. But anyway, would it be appropriate as a band room?
Well, there are built-in tiers, steps that encircle the room,
mm-hmm.
and there is, for example, ancillary rooms to the back that have no way of getting access other than walking up the stairs.
Right. We'll come back to the questions you had about the Field Deck, Mr. Spence. Cammie, you had questions.
Can I address this other question?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. For purposes of discussion, if you will recall, We were in the process of looking for who wanted to use the space for what reason. That's our normal way of looking at space. When space becomes available, we look for people who want to use the space. We were in the process of doing that when the board president said, do not look for other tenants, other leasers, other reasons to use the space. We want to discuss whether Willowood can be used as an extension of the charter school. So we stopped looking for tenants and other proposals, and we came to you and said, okay, let's hear the proposal that they have. Once we had sort of a email correspondence from the charter school principal about what the intention or vision was, as you recall, we brought it to the board meeting. We brought our legal counsel to begin negotiations for the facility use agreement.
Did you express to her that wasn't sufficient?
The first step is to get the vision for it. Then I do not say it's not sufficient. We include our architects and our legal.
No, the plan and proposal for usage.
Our architects and our legal are in there now and talking to Edison Learning about that proposal so that they can come back to us.
It's email proposal?
Yes.
Okay, so we don't have a formal proposal.
We do
so
not have.
So responding to their...
The board directed counsel and I to respond to that legal proposal, to that email proposal.
Mr. Cox, my point, though, was not, I know exactly that's what we did the last couple meetings. My point is I think that this is something in the future we should do at an earlier process. You know, when we get closer to the completion or before we get to the completion of a project, you know, we should have discussions about where the board wants to or what uses there may be, so that there's not delays in being able to utilize things that are complete. And I think that's what my point was. You know, I think, you know, for whatever reason, you know, this ended up being, had we had this discussion 6 months earlier, we wouldn't be having this discussion now. That's my point. That's my point.
Mrs. Polis had a follow-up question.
My follow-up question was about Building E. And from what I'm hearing you say is that the code and safety issues have still not been addressed in Building E.
Well, only on what I would call a tangential manner.
To 64 standards, they've been addressed to some degree. But for ADA and safety, like now we have different regulations for safety glass, lifts to get so all children and students have access to all rooms. Those things haven't been addressed. Railings that may need to be put up that are standards today. In those rooms, those standards have not been met in Building E.
That's correct. The only work that was done in Building E was tangential to the work on Building F.
And they do look much better than they did before. So it's great that
on the inside.
To work with the insurance company and have that much work done is, we're really grateful for the work everybody put in. I know it took a long time, but that was a lot more money than we at one time were told those buildings were condemned. And now we're talking about usage. So, I mean, that's really a great position to be in when we thought they were condemned.
All right, I'll go to the attorney and then I'll go back to Mr. Spence. Mr. Sklar, please.
And just one quick comment, and that's in regard to the discussion, as Mr. Spence had mentioned, in regard to use of the facilities. It is an ongoing discussion. In other words, the district was, to the charter school's credit, provided with an email of its intended use of the facilities. Now, that was, I think, in the middle, maybe February 18th, something like that, a little prior to our last meeting. This email, though, if we talk to the architects, is not sufficient in order to describe, you know, whether the intended use here, whether this matches up with the appropriate use of what DSI has signed off on. Mm-hmm. So just to know, it's not a one-time discussion. It is an ongoing discussion of information that the architects would require.
Mr. Spence.
Yeah. You know, and again, my point is we should have had that discussion much earlier than the February is what I'm saying. To the question of the Field Act came up at our last board meeting where it was said that the Field Act decides how many people are in classrooms. And I'm just trying to figure out where, how we figure out the classroom loading. There has to be a pretty straightforward system on how many kids can actually go inside the class. Isn't there, or isn't?
I anticipated you were asking a legal question, but I'm going to defer this back to you.
Well, I didn't call you up, but I didn't know. That's coming. But I mean, because that came up at the last meeting.
I guess wrong, too.
That came up at the last meeting.
There are code requirements in terms of the type of occupancy and the square footage that is allowed for each occupant within a specific type of room. And that was one reason that we indicated we'd need to know literally room by room what the intended use is to be able to do a code analysis, because it is very prescriptive in that regard.
Yeah, so when we do other projects, we had to go through that same process, though.
Correct. On every set of documents.
So like we took a continuation high school and changed it, you know, or back, you know, we've had to go through that same process.
Right. On every set of documents that we create that go to DSA, usually on either the cover or the very first page, is a code analysis, so that we give our interpretation of the code, and then we have it verified by DSA.
So for its intended use, you would already know how many kids can go in there for the intended use.
Certainly.
Okay. Because I think there was that was a little fuzzy from our last meeting on that, but okay. So we know how many kids can go, if that band room was compliant, how many kids could go in that. Maybe not that one, but the multipurpose room for sure, we know how many kids can go in that, or how many people.
We should, yeah. In fact, typically there's going to be a sign that says
no more. That was my idea. That was my idea.
No more seeing so many people.
That's what I thought we should
The
have
one
done,
that we violated this evening, probably, and that sort of thing.
Perhaps. Last meeting people didn't think that was a good idea. But
yeah. I just get a feel for what kind of numbers that we're talking about with respect to, let's just take the band room, that multi-tiered room in building E, to bring that up to a level that could be used by students as a band room. Do you have, are we talking millions of dollars? Are we talking tens of thousands of dollars? You don't have no clue.
I really have no clue. But I would guess the range, certainly not millions, tens of thousands, maybe up to a little more than that, possible. But again, it will depend on the actual use.
I just said for a band.
For a band. See, what will probably be triggered is, again, we've made what we call common sense suggestions on building E. And some of those aren't necessarily specific code issues, but they're rather safety issues.
That's the putting a fire extinguisher on a wall.
Right.
Right, that sort of thing. But that's not in the millions or hundreds of thousands of dollars issues, nor is it even in the tens of thousands of issues, tens of thousands of dollars.
For that one room, I think you're correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to have to come back and say, look at, you know, if they were to come to us and say, hey, listen, we want to use it for, you know, two classrooms and a band room and a teacher lounge, you know, are we going to have to now completely raise the building and go back and start all over again? I mean, we're not in that kind. I mean, that's the ultimate of being ridiculous.
Are you talking just about building E?
Building E only, because we've already come to the conclusion that building F, for its intended uses,
right,
is fully compliant with DSA codes and regulations.
Correct.
Perfect. Building E, that wasn't fire damaged or was smoke damaged as such, but it did have asbestos issues, so we took the opportunity to build it up to at the same time and take care of that at the same time. Right. So now if I've got two classrooms, a teacher's lounge, and a band room,
You don't have a teacher's lounge.
Okay, but I got three rooms. I was just...
You have the shop, the home economics.
Somex and the band room.
I doubt we're putting the lathe back in there.
But if I wanted to make those, I want to make that. I want to make those two classrooms and a band room.
That's where our recommendation is that, again, you identify it specifically room by room. and we would do a code analysis to be to assure ourselves and the district that it's safe for that occupancy.
And we didn't do that before. You just brought it up to what it was before. Home ec.
Keep in mind, Building E, we really did nothing other than some ancillary work that DSA required.
Okay, so all right.
Building E is exactly like it was.
Right.
Except that the asbestos has been removed.
Right. In fact, if you walked into that room, my guess is it looks the same as it did in 1964.
Oh, all right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
What triggers that review? Because we change the use of classrooms all the time in the district. You know, what triggers that review? That for a code analysis, you said it's very prescriptive. You know, is there grade level things? You know, what triggers that analysis? And you know, when should that be taking place? Or is it only on closed things?
I have a question.
Well, I think there are various triggers. I think one of which is cost. If it exceeds, I think. I don't know, I think it was $50,000.
You mean remodeling a room or something?
Right. Mm-hmm. Then it needs to go through DSA and don't hold me to that. I don't know what the exact number is, but there are various triggers like that it's not uncommon, for example, if you were to change a 960-square-foot classroom that was math to now some other subject. I mean, certainly that, yeah, like, even science, depending on the extent of your modifications. But so it will just depend on the extent of the.
So is it a dollar figure or what is it? I mean, what is it?
It could be a combination of dollar and use. So if you took a regular classroom and you said, I want to make it a science classroom, mm-hmm. that would trigger DSA no matter what okay. dollar it is due to fire and everything. If it was a classroom and you wanted to make it to home ec and it was over whatever the dollar amount is, that would trigger it.
Mm-hmm. So if we had that as a shop class, ironically, then we wouldn't have any kind of triggers, right? If we put heavy equipment in there to do wood stuff, there wouldn't be any.
You mean if you used it for its original
yeah.
purpose?
Yeah.
I don't believe it would trigger any DSA review, but that's.
But if we don't do a shop class in there, then it would.
It could.
It could. Okay, it could.
And again, we want to distinguish between what we call common sense safety issues
mm-hmm.
from DSA code issues, because there are things that I've walked that building and there are some things in there that are definitely safety issues.
Correct.
That might not be necessarily. Triggered by code.
Okay.
That's good, because we all know we need common sense solutions to this problem. I want to go to Eileen, please.
Okay, my question, you said the Building F, which is the multipurpose room, the only thing it can be used for at this time would be food services, cafeteria, kitchen. Could it even be used as a staff lounge? Because that's what...
You have a staff lounge there.
There's one in there.
Okay, so it can be occupied as a staff lounge. No one's using it right now.
That
nobody's in there.
Teacher's lounge.
So it,
one area.
Right. Right. So that means we can, effective immediately, have the kids eat their lunch in there, be protected from the elements immediately, because it was intended as a cafeteria kitchen use. And staff could occupy it as a lounge
yes.
because that's the intended use. So that could be effective immediately. But what's not effective immediately, that I'm understanding, is the band room. That would require modifications.
And the multipurpose room cannot be used for the proposal of a multimedia center of lab or...
But it could be immediately...
You can use it for performances. You can use the lounge. You can use the kitchen. You can use... We need to get tables in there for kids to sit down and eat.
Because currently they're still exposed to the elements, and we've got the rainy season. So we could, effective immediately,
and it takes 4 to 6 weeks to get the tables. Tables have been ordered, but it takes time for those tables to get here.
Could they at least stand in there and be protected from the element to eat? They're eating currently standing up.
They have for five years been
so
at this site.
Could they?
So we would look for ways to accommodate that, but obviously we want to make sure that we have the kids in an appropriate environment, not sitting on the floor.
Right, but they could stand and be protected from the elements, right?
There's no way.
They could go in there and eat, because that's the cafeteria.
I think from an architect's perspective, as long as you're using it for the intended use, how you use it is up to the district.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else? No, Cammie.
This is just a follow-up. I'm
no,
not
and
asking
then,
any
and
of my
then
questions
you ask anything
yet.
You want. You got okay. the floor.
I thought we agreed tentatively to let them use the space under the awning, and that we were going to research getting tables for them immediately so they wouldn't be standing in the sun. So it wasn't, we hadn't talked about the cafeteria because we didn't know, you know, if that was available yet, but to get them out of the elements under the awning, I thought was already approved, that we had talked about at the last meeting, and
that's
that
correct.
Tables were going to be ordered.
That's correct.
Has that not happened?
That's correct.
And when I'm hearing Ms. Castillo say it takes 6 weeks to get the tables.
4 to 6 weeks to get the tables.
So have they been ordered?
Yes.
So it is, something is in the works for okay. students now to be out of the elements and at least eating in a sheltered area, if not in the cafeteria. I just want to be, I think as a board, we were concerned that was happening, and that is something that's going to happen immediately, was my understanding.
Well,
and from what I understand, it's been, and they could go under that awning now, and
correct.
Like Mrs. Jimenez was saying, that they could go and stand and eat in the multi-purpose room, but they could go and stand and eat, I mean, if that's your concern, under the awning
they're
at this
there.
Point.
Okay. And I did you have other questions then, too?
I have. Do you want me to ask all my questions?
Absolutely.
I was wondering if we moved forward without the code and safety issues addressed in Building E, is there liability for the district and for individual board members if we move forward with that?
Sounds like a legal question to me.
The question I earlier anticipated. just to start out, when the board gave Ed direction to negotiate this agreement, I mean, it was our understanding that the board did want to make the finalized agreement as quickly as possible, make the facilities available as quickly as possible. So with that direction, a bunch of things had to occur. So the superintendent contacted the architect to go in and evaluate the facilities. As we approach negotiating the agreement, there are a whole host of issues and points, most of which we're not talking about tonight, that we're
oh, the night is still young.
Oh, not yet, anyway, that we're addressing. One of those issues is, of course, the safety issue. So we're trying to achieve an agreement that meets the district's goals and objectives here, while at the same time minimizing the risk to the district's and its constituency, and trying to come up with reasonable terms that do that. Here, the risks obviously are risk of injury to students, teachers, and others that use the facilities. And then there's the issue of derivative liability for the district and or individual board members as a result of that injury. Under the Field Act, it's one of the few places where individual board members have potential liability in their individual capacities. There's a bunch of statutes that deal with whether or not you get indemnification from the district if you're sued, but it's one of those places where, as an individual, you have exposure for the risk for injury or damage that occurs. So this is why the closeout with certification issue is so important. And correct me where I misstate this. I'm going to defer to the architects. But that's why the closeout with certification is so significant. The notion of closeout with certification means it's met DSA's requirements for that particular project, and what it gives you as a board is what's called design liability under the what I'll call dangerous condition statutes under the government code. And it provides you with immunity of sorts from suit for injury or damage that results so long as certain exceptions don't apply. One of those exceptions is a change in circumstance. arguably a change in circumstance is a change in use from the use originally approved as part of the plans and specifications that DSA certified. So that's where what the architects explain comes into the question that Ms. Poulos just asked in terms of the potential exposure of the district and the individual board members.
Wait, she's still asking questions.
Well,
no,
my question
finish.
All the time.
It's
about that question.
I'm wondering.
About liability.
I will. I'll get back.
I'm wondering how the modifications, and I don't know if this is the time to ask it. We worked a long time on how the modifications to the contract were going to be made, and if there was going to be modifications to facilities that we would pay for general use, and then if it was specific use to Edison Inc., that they would pay for those modifications. Are we going to be addressing that this evening, or are we going to be addressing that at a different time?
Well, Ed may kick me or have a different perspective on it, and I'll defer to him, but I think that whether or not the cost of what needs to be done based upon the use under the contract, again, goes back to clearly identifying the uses.
Okay.
So until we've clearly identified the use, I think it's a bit premature to try and answer the question under the contract is who has cost responsibility. So do you want to add anything to that?
Just for the edification of the board, I think that the provision within the current management agreement between Edison and the district, which discusses facilities and the cost for facilities, says that the district is responsible for making sure that they are providing a safe and an appropriate building that is reasonably equivalent to what the students in the district have in regard to facilities. But there is a provision in the agreement that states to the extent that Edison's program design calls for different or additional facilities, Edison shall be solely responsible for the cost of such facilities and any ancillary property, furnishings and equipment. That's what meant by ancillary property. So we need to figure out what the facilities, what the rooms are going to be used for, and then we can determine whether these are different or additional facilities for the Edison's design for Edison's program, and then that will determine who's responsible for the improvements made to the room.
And who will decide who does the work on those buildings? I know that we have employees that could probably do some of the work, but how is that determined?
Part of that, again, will depend on the nature of the work and the extent of the work that needs to be done and whether or not it falls under the bid limits under the public contract code. As you know, under the public contract code for construction services, the district is required to bid out any work over $15,000. There's an exception whereby the district can do certain work by what they call force account, its own forces. But I think for a district under 35,000 ADA, that's limited to work if it's going to be less than 350 total hours of work or something like that. Now, it's not required that you do it by your own forces. It is simply an option that's provided under the public contract code.
And who are we negotiating with? Who will sign the agreement when we're done? I know the board will sign it, and who is the agency that we're contracting with?
Well, what we want, I don't know who is going to be signing on behalf of Edison Learning at this point, simply because, and I think that may be as a result of just the drafting process. I don't have somebody's name there yet. The name that was there was crossed out. I'm expecting that somebody's name from Edison Learning will be replaced there. Our goal would be to keep it so that it is the same obligations that the charter school Edison Learning, the for-profit corporation, have in this agreement and the same obligations to the district that they have in this agreement that they have in the original management contract agreement, and that that relationship remains.
Same obligations? Is
same
what
obligations,
okay.
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Those are my questions for right now.
Mr. Spence?
In the last 50 years or so, how many times have board members been held personally liable under the Field Act? This theoretical liability.
I have no idea.
I mean, happen a lot? Must not happen a lot, or it happens little, or?
Again,
I mean, the act's been around, what, 80 years, something like that?
I have no statistics or data on it. Mm-hmm. As to whether at a trial court level an individual board member has been held liable. More often than not, you'll find out about these things at an appellate level because those decisions are published, or at a trial court level through the grapevine. Like I say, I have not seen it.
Wait, okay. Because, you know, on liability, I want to know, well, you know, we're liable for all kinds of things. But are people really held liable for it or not? The other question, I guess, is for the architects, for Ms. Larkin. And that was, when did we as a district start engaging you in this process to look at the different sites, you know, for these code things, for these possible code things and common sense improvements? When did we start that process?
Let me be certain I'm answering the correct question. Are you referring to just building E and F?
Well, not just building it, but the second part of making the common sense adjustments or the kind of code things for the original use stuff.
Yeah, I think it was
the day before.
Right.
I wrote the memo on March 2nd, March 1st.
Okay.
March of 2011?
Yes.
Right. So we were contacted, and the next day we were looking and developed the memo.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions on that? No? You know what? Since there was question with respect to the ultimate usage and utilization of the facilities, I would like, if you would mind, Denise Patton, the principal of the school.
Thank you. I wanted to get something clarified. There was a statement that was made that we were just sending by emails our comprehensive plan. And in actuality, the comprehensive plan was a Word document in which the superintendent had asked me several questions to address. I was asked how the facilities were going to be used, so I sent that in. I then received a comment back that said how many, and there were several other questions. So I then got it all finished on a it was just literally complete with the exact usage for every room, how many students would be occupied, if it would be used during the day after school. It was all laid out, and how we were going to be funding it. And that went into the superintendent's office more than a month ago. So I am really sort of concerned and frustrated that when I hear dialogue happening regarding we have to match up how it's going to be used, we need to see that plan, it was just emailed, that actually I think is a misrepresentation of what has occurred. And my thought was, if that plan was in the hands of district staff, maybe why was it not submitted to the architects on March 1st to say, here's how the charter school has laid out how they're going to use it. It was very specifically detailed about our plans. And again, we keep hearing that there was no plan and we don't have it. The other thing I'd like to get clarified is that, from my knowledge, and I work hand in hand with Edison Learning, we had not pulled out of the plans to convert that media or the cafeteria into a library media center. Those plans were already approved by a former board, but the fire stopped us, and we were just waiting for the renovation. The only thing that was ever stated was that we would possibly not be bringing it up to the grand plan. We were going to have all of these different things involved, but we still had, we have tens of thousands of dollars of books that we have in boxes in the warehouse and the school waiting to be put on bookshelves that we're ready to order and put in there. We're not using the stage for anything but a stage. So there's all of this talk as if we're going to be doing this grand master modernization when really we're looking at just wanting to use it for a library media center that will have the same capacity or less of what a cafeteria full of junior high kids are going to be occupying. So I'm not quite sure of where the hang-up is on that one. But I just wanted to make sure the board understood that we had a comprehensive plan already submitted more than a month ago. And then the final thing about the band room, when I walked the band room, I finally had a chance to see that. Painted, repainted, totally, it looks totally modernized. From what I understood from their report, it needed a railing and it needed the glass to be replaced. To me, this could be done in a week. So I'm not quite sure what all the questions
are. So would you
are.
Share with us exactly then, I'm talking now with Building E,
sure.
with respect to what I'm going to characterize as the band room, the multi-tiered room. What is your intent to use that for?
A band room.
The home ec room, that's the corner one in that building, that corner one.
A choir room.
Choir room, okay. And then what was used as the shop room, what
yes.
did you want to use that
for?
We
were going to use that as the yearbook / ASB leadership. Because we have the outlets coming up from the floor, we simply were going to put tables over those outlets in order for us to plug in computers and different things under the table. It made perfectly good sense. And then we had that, it's a very large room. So it was going to occupy tables over the outlets and possibly an area on the side for individual students working.
All right,
that was
fine.
Sort of the plan.
So we have a gist of what it is. And if you've already done that proposal, if you would, please resubmit it. And the architects have now heard specifically what your intent
no,
to use.
Mr. Cox, from the principal's point of view, her explanation is fine for us to a level. It is not
That's fine.
For
I'll
us.
Get there in just a minute. Just don't interrupt.
Okay, well,
don't
I just want you to I just right. want you to I see
understand.
Mr. Cox. You're saying there's a plan.
Time
She's
out.
Saying there's
time
a plan.
Out. Time
there
out.
Is no plan.
I did not
there's
that.
A vision for the use that's inappropriate
you don't
for the
have
building.
The floor. All right. I'll tell you when you can speak.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Excuse me.
Do
not
now,
speak to members
I will,
of staff that way.
Yeah, thank you very much. All I'm trying to do is just get a generalization of what it is so that we can kind of begin to move forward. I think the essence of this board was so that we could move forward in the plans. If it takes something more specific, then, you know, let's do that. But I want everybody to kind of get on the same page. You know, we've got kids, we've got facilities that are at or near completion, and we have children that are in a position to utilize those facilities. I want to match those two as quickly as possible.
May I ask a
and that's,
question
And that's certainly
that?
What I said
okay.
Before. So,
okay. I'm just curious because I had asked after all of the emails being sent to say, please let me know if there's anything else you need. And at no time have I heard back that it wasn't sufficient. The other thing I'm curious about, it said there is no plan because it's just a vision and it doesn't incorporate how those are supposed to be used. But should our plan be... Our plan is our plan of how we want to use it, and that's what I've submitted. So I'm not quite sure about the superintendent's comment about.
You can deal
how
with you'll deal
look.
With that after this
okay.
meeting. We're
All
not
right.
going to deal with this at this point in time.
Sure,
we
no
understand.
Problem.
We've let this out in the open. We've shared this conversation for quite some time now. We have a huge agenda ahead of us this evening, and I think we've got enough direction. Mr. Spence, I'll give you the last word.
Now, last word, it's a question, and it's about our standard operating procedure. And I know Mr. Siemens, you know, was finishing up this project. But when we are finishing up a project for this DSA and the use and stuff, what are our standard procedures on dealing with how the space is going to be used and signed off and these other kinds of things that kind of come after the fact? I mean, is there a checklist that, Mr. Siemens would have had or someone would have had that said, okay, you know, we need to discuss the use of what this building is going to be in the future rather than waiting until it's almost completed to do it or we know when we shift it, you know, we're going to do it. I mean, how does that work within the facilities office?
Do
Can I speak now,
yeah,
Mr. Cox?
Ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
We started the meeting by saying that we basically look at building space for people who are interested in using that space. And when I say using the space, I'm talking about architectural plans, specific plans that say square footage. We have a general sense of what the school, the charter school, would like to use it for. But frankly, we don't negotiate with the principal. This is something that's being negotiated with the company. It is something that needs to meet state codes. It needs to meet DSA, ADA, and many other things which she does not understand. And therefore, once we have that general vision and that general direction, we would come to the board, whether it be them or the county or anybody else. Ellie recently gave the board an update about someone who's requesting space in our district. The first step in that is seeing if the board is interested in using that space for those specific purposes. If the board says yes, we contact the architects and legal to draw up what needs to be drawn up in terms of next step, expenses, and budget. We need to make sure that you understand that, Mr. Spence, you're saying that 6 months ago we should have, you know, had this idea that this was going to be used, but once we started looking for what the use was, I was basically told, no, you're only going to use it for the charter school. So I said, fine. We brought Ed forward. We said, okay, architects, come forward. Let's hear what this vision is. The architect said here that the plans that have been submitted are not enough. That is not enough for us to move forward on this. The only thing that we could move forward on is the multi-purpose room for food services. If we were to use the multi-purpose room for other than that, it would take a lot of discussion. If you recall, in our plan, and we have here, we had months of conversations with the management company about what their architect was going to provide to do this media center, which was going to be called the Junior Academy Mini Lab. This Junior Academy Mini Lab took a lot of work between Mr. Frutos and the Edison Learning, Inc. Architect to come up with a plan. It isn't just come into the building and put computers and a couple of tables. It isn't cover outlets and put tables. There's so much more that is needed. And frankly, it is important that that information is not even handled at my level. I turn that over to architects and attorney to figure out what is legal, what is needed, what are the compliance. As you know, Stuart Moe, our facilities director, quit. As you know, Mr. Ruben Frutos is no longer here. They were in charge of these projects. Lucky for us, we have Dave Larkin, our consultant, who has been able to carry out a lot of this work and a lot of our negotiations. But we can't proceed until we have from those who are interested what they want to use it for. And then we have to talk about negotiating who does the work, how much does it cost, is the board interested. So we're at a point now where we're having those conversations, and we will continue to have those conversations if that's the board direction. We have no problem with that. But we do have to basically do this no matter who asks for the space. We need to have the same process followed.
Okay. My question was whether or not we had like a checklist or a standing operating procedure when we had these kinds of projects where we look at what the end result's going to be and what needs to be done to have them ready. And, you know, my question is, as part of our standard practice, when we do these kinds of projects, do we have a mechanism in place that triggers the discussion about what we might have to do in the future to make sure these things are as ready as soon as possible? And where does that fit? Do we have that in the standard operating procedures? You know, is our checklist? How does that work? That's my question.
Most of the requests for facility use go to the Assistant Superintendent of Business Services. That person then works with legal counsel and architects to bring to the board a discussion on those requests. So in this case, we didn't have that. And so what we had was staff and I looking for people who may want to use any part of our space. When we were told that that was not what the board majority was interested in, we said, okay, we'll work with legal and architects to meet the needs of the charter school. But as we sit here today, we are not yet ready to move forward on any of this because we don't have the appropriate information that we need to do so.
Right. So do we have, like, a checklist or as part of our standard operating procedure, a place where we have these kinds of discussions?
We can ask Mr.
No.
We can ask.
No. I won't keep going.
Okay.
Dave, do we have a checklist?
No, you know what? No, I appreciate it, but, you know, we're done with this right now.
No, because I think, you know, I'd like to know if that's in place, because I think, you know, the discussion she's talking about took place last month, and, you know, that I just want to know that in our standard operating procedures that there's a point where we start dealing with that at the board level, and that's what I want to know, if that's in place, if there's a checklist, or how does that work? That's my question.
I'll give this gentleman one more time, and then I'll give Jessica one quick question, and then we're going to move on.
As far as the checklist would be concerned, it would be a little bit out of the ordinary for this particular project. For example, most of the projects and modernizations that were done and within the district were pretty much to be modernized, cleaned up, repainted, mm-hmm. put back in as it was, basically. This project here was put back as it was, with the exception of us re-reviewing it for a potential change in use. So that's why this was a little bit out of the ordinary.
Right. Is that a normal process, that there is a process to deal with that use?
Yeah,
part?
Usually the architect would, basically we go do a modernization for the high school. And yeah, if the classrooms, you're gonna modernize the science classrooms, you're just going to touch them up, clean them up, but you're not actually going through the high school and saying, okay, I'm going to demo this science lab and I'm going to reconfigure this science lab in another building. You're typically changing teachers for locations as opposed to wasting your money by demoing and then rebuilding in another location in order to make somebody happy. So I don't know if that answers your question or not.
A little bit. Thank you for trying to answer the question.
Ms. Shoemaker has a question for the attorneys.
Mr. Sklar. This will be your issue. I'm just curious. This report from DC Architects, was this part of your discussion with Edison Learning? Did we forward a copy to them? How are they aware of specific details in a report prepared for us? Was it part of your negotiations with the facilities agreement?
That was forwarded on since the last meeting in the course of my discussions with Mr. Simmons, counsel for the charter school. I did forward that on to make him aware of the life safety concerns.
Okay, and they understood that this is very, very preliminary, that this was not a full report of what may need to be done to those buildings?
I think the wording in the report qualifies it as such. So.
Did they acknowledge that they understand that it's a preliminary report?
I can't remember if the word preliminary report was used, but I have to do it. Either I used it or they did.
I mean, the statement made here tonight was, you know, the band room only needs these two changes. Well, that doesn't...
I, to me, give an
understanding that it's a preliminary report.
That it is not preliminary?
The person who made the statement would appear to not understand that this is a very preliminary report, that this is a first go-through of the buildings. And so I just want to understand that Edison Learning is clear that this is a preliminary report. It's by no means a final list of what may need to be done to those buildings.
I think the document speaks for itself.
Okay.
All right. So now that we're done with this item, I'll go back to what the board direction was at the last meeting, is that I think the intention is to have the facilities, buildings E and F, used for the charter school in the intent that they want to do now, not what they wanted to do 5 years ago, now. And we need to make sure that that's clear. And then once that's clear, we need to make sure that the architects understand what those needs are, make the recommendations as to what requirements are, hopefully get us an estimate of cost and time to complete. I mean, our goal here is to get buildings that have not been utilized for many, many years into a facility that can be used by the children for their educational purposes as soon as possible. All right. With that, we will go.
Excuse me? Go ahead. That sounded like direction, and I don't believe that we've ever taken a formal vote.
We don't have a vote on this. This is not a vote action.
But when you were saying that the board, you believe that direction was given to the attorneys, it's difficult when we've never taken a formal vote on anything and it hasn't been up for a formal vote.
I tried 2 weeks ago because I didn't think it was
clear. All right. How do you want to accomplish that?
Well, it was information report only. I don't believe that we can take a vote on something without the public being aware there's going to be a vote. So I don't believe that you can say that direction's been given when we haven't had the opportunity to vote on anything.
Sure, I understand. And if the intent is to defer that, I believe that the just a second. I believe that there is direction from what I'm getting from the input on from the each of the individuals involved. Reasonably sure that the direction that I've given is respective of that. However, if you think that we need a vote, as superintendent, I'll defer to you. You made reference to a board majority made some recommendation, and you've now gone ahead and moved in that direction. If you think that we need an item, I'm certainly this thing needs to be done. It needs to be done right away. If we need to take a break, we can come back. We can set up 24 hours. We can meet Monday or Thursday morning and come back and take an action item on this item if that's absolutely necessary.
Mr. Cox, can I address it? What I understood, and you correct me, legal counsel, if I'm wrong, was that you were looking for use of the multipurpose room to June.
That's correct.
And that you wanted us to do that as soon as possible. We talked about the fact that we could get tables there and have the covered area between now and June. We think that we could accommodate that. But as far as any other direction in terms of, you know, what's going to be needed in these other buildings for these other purposes, there will be a process and some next steps that have to take place that, you know, whether there's a vote or not a vote, it will take a process to get us there. And so what we're doing is we're taking it a step at a time. The first step is to figure out how to help those students have a place to sit and eat. The second step was for us to look at negotiating a facility use agreement with Edison Learning, Inc. There are some issues that have come up through this process that we will keep the board informed of. As you all know, Mr. Simmons, counsel for Edison Learning, put on the record that they would like, as of July, not to be the management company for the school, and that they would be submitting a proposal that we were supposed to get today. We did not receive any proposal, and therefore, as we work through this, we need to come back to the board a step at a time. I guess what I'm saying is, if we're still on the first agreement that we're looking for the students to have a place to eat lunch, I think we have direction.
All right. Then let me share with you my personal opinion. My personal opinion is we have a band room that I would like children from Edison, the San Jose Edison Charter School, to utilize as a band room as soon as possible. And a conversation. That's my opinion about where I would like to have this utilized in that capacity, and I'd like it done as soon as possible so that kids can have some place to have performances, can practice, can do the things that they talk to do. You know what? I'll even throw in the choir room, which is the former Hormek room. You know, and those are things. That's just my opinion as to what they'd go. Each of you, I'll give you just one more opportunity to share your specific ideas as what you would want this to go. That'll give you at least a means by which we can go until we take an actual formal action on this item. Mr. Spence, I'll start with you. Go to Ms. Shoemaker.
I stand by my comments from 2 weeks ago, and I thought we should have taken a vote when it was agendized.
Ms. Shoemaker.
I think that the direction was given to prepare a facilities use agreement through June 30th against the advice of our legal counsel, but that was the direction given.
What is your preference, please?
As to the vote, I don't know. I think as long as we're on this process here where there is an understanding with Edison Learning that it is not as simple as just saying we're going to use this as a band room, that there are things that are going to be modifications that are needed to the rooms, and it is ironed out who's going to pay for them, I will eventually have to vote on the facilities use agreement.
Ms. Miranda, go ahead.
But an outstanding issue is the fact that in some of the discussions about the facilities use agreement, Edison Learning itself is sort of crossing itself out like and taking liability away. Well, at least through the end of this facilities use agreement, they are going to be the management company. And so I think that's a serious issue that needs to be addressed.
Well, they're the management company, right, unless we change.
Ms. Miranda Jimenez, please.
The three things that I'd like to see happen immediately would be a sheltered place for the students to eat, whether it's indoor or outdoor. The band and the choir, those are the least, those require the least amount of changes and can be brought up to code quickly. Those were my,
okay.
That's my three.
Ms. Polis.
I'm glad that Ms. Castillo has already ordered the tables for the students to eat, and we know they will be sheltered. I don't have a problem with them using the multi-purpose room as through June, as it's been set up. And I do have a problem with them doing anything in Building E, where safety and issues and code issues have not been established. If we can, even if we meet the basic standards, I don't know if that's enough. I want to make sure that we meet everything. If a student with a disability goes in, I don't want to have a lawsuit because that student didn't have access to the practice rooms. I want to know how those are going to be addressed. If they're going to change the way the multi-purpose room is going to be used, we have a plan that was developed in 8-1908. I don't know if that's the latest one, but it talks about telecom drops in circles to be relocated if possible. Other are existing, so they're talking about new electrical drops, new telecom drops. Are those are the kind of things that need DSA approval if they're going to put that in the multi-purpose room?
My mother-in-law's cancer.
Okay. You know what? No. I don't need more questions.
Okay,
I want you to just give your opinion what you would like to do, and they will follow the direction.
So I don't think that unless those questions could be answered, I don't want it used in any other way than its intended use.
Very good. All right. Thank you very much for that. Look, we probably ought to take a break, but just to move things along a little bit, we have two two information reports that I'd like to get to before we take a break, if you wouldn't mind.
Mr. Cox, I need a quick break.
All right, we're going to take a break now.
Yeah.